Hi, Tim. This is Marva. I'm back on.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, and I too am back on, Tim.
Great. Okay. Well, maybe with that, we will get started. So the first thing is I am going to mute all the lines except for the speakers. So let me do that now. And then in a few minutes after the presentations, we'll open it back up for questions. So let me just say to the participants, when we do get to the questions, it will be really helpful if you press *6 to mute your lines. But until then, we'll mute all the lines except the speakers.
All guests have been muted.
So okay. Hopefully Lucia and Marva are still with me.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, great. Marva?
I'm here.
Okay, great. Okay, so let's get started. This is Tim Brennan. I'm the treasurer and CFO of the Unitarian Universalist Association and also a member of the investment committee. And what we are going to be doing today is we're going to hear from two speakers. The first is Lucia Santini. Lucia is a relatively new member of the investment committee, although she had a previous tenure with the investment committee, in fact, chaired it maybe 8 years ago or something like that, maybe more than that, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So we're really delighted to have Lucia back on the committee. Lucia is an experienced portfolio manager with Walden Asset Management. They are one of the leading socially responsible investment companies in the world. And then we also have Marvin Williams from the Committee on Socially Responsible Investing. Marva actually has an expertise in community investing and CDFIs. She works, I believe, for the Federal Reserve. Is that right, Marva?
That's right.
Yeah. So specifically in this field. So, you know, the association really benefits so much from dedicated lay leaders like Lucia and Marva, who bring their expertise to us and help to lead the association, and in this particular case, lead our investment program. So what we will do today is we're going to hear from Lucia talking about the quarterly performance through December. She's also going to talk about the outlook and expectations. This is a key part of the year for the committee because we hear from our investment consultants, New England pension consultants, about their long-term forecast for the markets, and that's what helps guide our asset allocation strategy. So Lucia will talk about that, and she'll also talk about the recent investment committee meeting and the outcomes from that. Then we're going to hear from Marva about CDFAs, the UUA's community investing program within the Common Endowment, and perhaps also something about our matching program. And then we'll open up the line for your questions, and we will do our best to provide those answers. And then we'll wind up by 3 o'clock. So let me start by handing the microphone, the virtual microphone, over to Lucia. And it will be very helpful, by the way, if you have the PowerPoint presentation open to follow along. And if you didn't pre-register and therefore you didn't get it by email from Susan Helbert, it's available on the website. If you just go to uucef.org, over on the right side, you will see a link to the presentation. And then last thing to say is we are recording this call, and it will be posted on the website probably within a day or so, so that if you have other committee members or members of your congregation that you think would benefit from it, you can point them to it and they can listen in. So with that, let me turn it over to Lucia.
Thank you, Tim. And I will be starting with the page immediately following the agenda. entitled Total Fund Performance Summary Gross of Fees, December 31, 2014. And I will endeavor to point out which slide number I am speaking to as I get to them. And I believe all the subsequent slides are numbered in the upper right-hand corner, so that hopefully it'll be easier for you to follow along, or later when you have questions to direct us back to the slide that you may have a question about. So December was another mixed quarter for investment performance, and really mixed depending on which region and which market cap size and a variety of factors. I think one of the continuing trends in the marketplace that was very strongly evident in the fourth quarter as well as earlier quarters was the continued dominance, I guess I'd call it, of index fund performance over active managers. There are often cycles in the market where the index leads active managers by a significant margin, and then other parts of the cycle where the reverse is true. And for a bit of time now, we've been in a cycle where index returns have tended to lead active managers, and this trend, as well as others, I think, is evident in the fourth quarter 2014 performance of the Common Endowment Fund, with its composite portfolio returning just under 0.5%. Trailing the allocation and policy index. So whenever the composite trails the index, then that obviously means that the managers that were hired by the UUA have underperformed their respective benchmarks that the committee has assigned to monitor their performance. And as I indicated, this is a broad trend across the market where active managers have underperformed their benchmarks. It is always an opportunity for the UUA to examine its choices and understand the reasons for underperformance of any manager, and to determine whether that underperformance was predictable and acceptable, or not expected and not so acceptable. And so those types of discussions and analyses are ever present, and I do think on your last call, Carol or Tim may have discussed with you that the committee had been concerned with the performance in particular of the global tactical asset allocation managers, and had been looking more closely at both of them. And indeed, you can see on this total fund performance summary page that in the commentary, NEPC has certainly highlighted GMO and Wellington, among others, in underperforming. And so while they weren't alone, they were noticeable in contribution to underperformance for the endowment for the quarter and the year. So for the quarter, performance a little less than 0.5 at 40 basis points, and for the year, just under 4 at 3.8. And obviously, relative to the S&P 500 at just under 14%, that's a fairly disappointing number. But as you know, the S&P is not is not a globally diversified and market capitalization diversified index, and so it represents a more narrow portion of the market. The Europe, Asia, and Far East, the International Developed Markets Index, lost almost 5%, and emerging markets lost a little more than 2%. So it was a mixed return across the globe, and indeed within small and large cap. Again, there was divergence with large cap outperforming significantly against small caps. So a period of very divergent returns. The next page, which on the top right is labeled page 4, just breaks down in greater detail the managers into each of the categories, and so that you can see the performance within the category against the benchmark of that category. So there you'll see, if you look at the first category underneath composite, you'll see domestic equity composite, which returned 5.1% versus the Russell 3000's 5.2%. So that's a very, very close return. That return is net of fees, and so it is exactly equivalent to the Russell. Well, no, not really, because the Russell has no fees, but it is a very appropriate comparison, and the domestic equity component, you will recall, is managed in an index-like fashion, however, excluding companies that do not meet the UUA's ESG and SRI criteria. And so that you know, very competitive performance against the benchmark, because it is indeed managed as an index, is a further testament to my comment about relative performance of index versus active. And then if you look further down, I guess I'd call your attention to the GTAA composite, which is the third down beneath that, where you'll see that composite returned minus 0.6 versus its index benchmark of almost positive 1%. So again, there the trend of active underperforming the index. So happily to report that in the equity segment, our equity manager did perform better than the index, and that I would say is a hallmark of one of the active strategy approaches that that the UUA has favored, which is the UUA's manager there, really focuses predominantly on sustainable, high-quality companies, and those companies do tend to provide greater protection in a falling market. And obviously, unlike the U.S. market, the international markets were in decline in the fourth quarter, and that approach did benefit us both for the quarter and the year. And I'm not sure there's too much more that I want to call your attention to on that page. Then the next page is helpful just to show you the asset allocation within the Common Endowment Fund, both what the policy is, which is the far left stack bar, and then next to it, the current policy, and then the actual, which digs into what each of the global asset allocation managers has deployed their allocations to, and put that in the actual buckets. So you can see, for example, that the UUA's policy was to invest 13% in international equities in the developed markets and 7% in emerging market equities. And then if you look over to the far right to see what is the impact on our policy choices of the global asset allocation managers, you can see that the managers increased those weights to 16.5 and 9.5, which again in a falling market environment is a meaningful contributor to the shortfall in performance relative to the benchmark. And then the next slide, page 6, just places the Common Endowment Fund for the quarter, the fiscal year to date, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, and 10 years, within the universe of endowment size peers tracked by NEPC. And this particular page in some ways is just confirming the commentary that NEPC had in the very first slide that I spoke to, which indicates that the shorter-term performance that the Common Endowment Fund is trailing its peers, but over the longer term, the results are much more attractive and competitive relative to the peer group. And then lastly, page 7 just has that exact same information on a year-by-year basis, so you can see exactly the environments in which the Common Endowment Fund has done relatively better and relatively worse, and indeed some of its strongest performance has been in the most challenging markets, the 2008 and 2009. That concludes my overview of performance and commentary. And now to the slide marked 8 in the upper right-hand corner, just to talk a bit about Outlook, and these are a few select pages from NEPC's work to share their longer-term, short and longer-term views with the investment committee. And so we felt that these were some important points to share with you, that this global market environment is extremely unusual, and investors really need to adjust to the unusual and shifting global environment to meet their objectives. These very low interest rates have had some extremely unusual, along with desired impacts that the rate, that the central banks have looked for. You know, there are some not necessarily expected or sought impacts on financial markets, and investors have to watch out for those and manage around them. This low return world creates challenges. Investors must take on more risk. It's undeniable, and find ways to take those risks more efficiently, and in many cases increase contributions if payouts ultimately need to rise more over time. And so these cause investors to question traditional approaches that they may have relied on, and take a fresh look at what is this this world of investing with no short-term interest rates, and the need for much more aggressive risk-taking in order to achieve returns. And then the next page, marked page 9 in the upper right-hand corner, divergence across countries and regions are likely to continue. The policy responses in different parts of the world have been very different to the Great Recession, and obviously we're seeing that, we have seen that, and now just when the Fed has ceased its aggressive quantitative easing, that approach is now very, very recently being implemented by the EU, where it was not held in high regard for quite some time, and these things are going to continue to cause imbalances and divergence and dislocations in various markets. And NEPC has recommended, and we agree, that it causes it makes necessary the review of those with unconstrained or alternative mandates to ensure that their skill and their fees are warranted in this environment, because management fees are a bigger penalty in a lower return environment, and the amount of risk that you take on relative to the level of return you achieve is very important for endowments with really continuous payout needs. And then page 10, private markets are continued. NEPC certainly continues to expect that they will provide higher expected longer-term returns within their profile, which is one of significant complexity and illiquidity, and their belief that narrow strategies offer us more attractive opportunities, and narrow, whether defined by sector or by geography or construct. And NEPC was recommending to its clients that the collapse in energy prices offers an attractive entry point for some sorts of deals. It's unlikely that those would be of interest to the UUA, given the preference to avoid fossil fuels. And then I guess the last thing that I would share with you at this point about the outlook is just their assumptions for returns for the coming year are shared on page 11 and simply show pretty much approximately a 25 basis point reduction for the most part across all of the asset classes, a little greater with emerging markets and a little less with GMO and a favorable variance for Bridgewater. That, I guess, takes me through the outlook and expectations. Tim, I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind unmuting them now and letting them ask questions about that point. I hate to listen to myself talk for this long, and it would be great to have some questions now and then launch into the investment committee review.
Sure, we can do that. So I am going to first unmute everybody, and then I think, let's see how that goes.
All guests have been unmuted.
Okay, so the lines are all open. If anybody has a question for Lucia, go ahead and speak up.
This is Joan. Hi, Lucia. I'm in San Diego.
Hi, Joan.
As I look at page 10, or was it 9, or was it 8, what I get, fees must align with conviction and alpha generation ability as well as uniqueness of strategy. And they like the sharp ratio in hedge funds. And the more complex it gets, the higher the fee that UUA might be expected to pay. Am I reading these notes correctly? What NEPC is kind of always leaning toward is these private equities and hedge funds, all the fancy things. Am I wrong?
They definitely do lean in that direction fairly consistently, I would agree.
Thank you. So I obviously want
to
hear how the investment committee responds, but that's the next item on the agenda, right?
Yeah. Well, so I guess what I'd say is, you know, I think that the this goes back to my first stint on the committee over 10 years ago. I think they had the same preference then, and I think the UUA's investment committee has been very careful and thoughtful about where and when to add any of the more complex and higher fee approaches, and when our asset allocation is compared to our peers, I do think we have a bit less than our peers in general.
Yeah, this is Tim. And the other thing, a couple other things to point out is that actually if you look at overall the expenses of the fund, they've actually been coming down over the last few years. I think when I started here 8 years ago, it was about 1.15%. Maybe it was 1.2%. And now it's this last fiscal year, it dropped below 1%. So it's about 0.98%. So I think we're doing a good job of managing the overall fees, those as you call the more complex kinds of investments. I mean the 5% we've allocated to a fund of hedge funds has actually performed just as we hoped it would. You know, some decent return, but very modest fluctuation, variability, so lower risk. And then the Bridgewater Fund, which is called a risk parity fund, has over the years performed very well for us, decent return, not a lot of risk. So those investments have worked well. On the U.S. equity side, it's mostly indexed. So we're paying, I think, 0.12%. We're paying very little for the management of the equities. Any other questions?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, the Roger Johnson in Atlanta. And back on page 4, the total fund performance summary, there were two categories there that were not commented on. One was the fixed income composite, and the other was the hedge fund. Where there's a fair discrepancy in the 3 months, the last 3 months, with a comparison. The comparison indexes or whatever. Are you? These were not commented on early when this was gone over, and so, particularly with the fixed income composite, the 3 months is 0.3%, and the Barclays aggregate there, which is, I assume, what you're comparing it to, is 1.8%. Is there some? Do you have some comment on that or explanation?
So, my best guess is that that relates to the manager termination and transition, which occurred in the fourth quarter. Did it not, Tim?
It's in flux still. Yeah.
So, BlackRock. No. Tim.
It was from
Brecken.
So the PIMCO fund is being terminated.
The PIMCO fund, exactly.
Oh, okay. So, in the future, once this is sorted out, you would hope that there's not going to be that discrepancy there.
Well, so I guess I would say that again, decisions and assessments are not made in the short term. In the short term, we are really just looking at the performance to ensure that it's consistent with what we were seeking. So I guess underperformance is in the short term is always to be expected, because no one approach is going to consistently outperform through all parts of a market cycle. If you look over to your right, the 1 year performance, it trails, but not horribly, but the 3 year performance and the 5 year performance and
the
7
way.
And the 10 year performance are all very strong. So approaches tend not to be successful in every component of a market cycle, and so underperformance in any one portion of the cycle is not a concern, absent other issues going on. And in the case of PIMCO, the issues going on were changes in the management team and changes in the firm, which concerned us enough to drive a change in the manager.
I see. Okay.
And was there one other that you...
Well, I did mention the hedge funds, but I guess you would expect that to be very not conform.
Yeah. So really, a hedge fund index is in my opinion, a fairly strange beast.
I agree with that.
So
yeah, and if
I'm not sure how
little
meaningful it is. It's really whether they're performing their role in the portfolio through the cycle.
Yeah.
There.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you look at the the quarter is off a bit, but if you go out a little further, 1 year is basically right on the index, and the 3 years and the 5 years substantially outperforms the index. So I think that Entrust fund to funds has actually done its job within our portfolio.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I have one question.
Who is this?
I'm Marty from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. If you look on page 5, the emerging equity market, the policy is 7% and the actual is 9.4%. and that's about a 34% increase over policy. Is there some reason somebody had the liberty to invest more in that area?
So as I indicated, the actual column takes all of the assets managed by the global asset allocation managers and places them within the categories that the managers have selected. These managers have been given free rein to move to the part of the market where they feel the best value can be had, and so unfortunately, their decisions detracted from value in a meaningful way, both on the international side and the emerging side. And indeed, you know, again, if it were just a short term, we would not be so concerned. But as I mentioned, the committee had taken a pretty careful look at the managers. There was concern about the global asset allocation managers that I believe Tim and Carol reported on the last call. And when I get to the we're on to the investment committee meeting review, so I'll jump to that and just tell you that there was, since both global asset allocation managers had been re-interviewed by the committee then had
all guests have been muted. You can unmute your line by pressing *6.
The committee then had a very fulsome discussion about those, and it was unanimously determined that one of the GAA managers warranted termination, and that was Wellington. So, so that reflected our lack of confidence in their strategy, which it seemed to the committee had both drifted from their original strategy, and which did not seem to be sufficiently robust, and whose results certainly were disappointing and had not provided the role in the portfolio which they had been selected for and promised to deliver. So, the committee's assessment of the manager was that their contribution to the underperformance was material, and so they are being terminated, and that money is going to be redeployed initially into cash, and subsequently some portion probably into private equity. We will be looking at two opportunities, both in real estate, one very focused in real estate in England, and another that's a little bit more geographically diverse, but primarily in Europe. And I don't know where the meetings and deliberations will take place tomorrow. So I can't report on that yet, but just that those considerations are upcoming. So one of the other items that the committee spent time talking about was asset allocation. And so for that, I'll turn you to the page mark 12 in the upper right-hand corner, and where you see the current target and some alternatives that NEPC put forth for us to consider, along with the expected returns and expected risk of those portfolios, and report that after discussion and deliberation, the committee believed that a movement in the direction of the one marked mixed D combined, which increases the allocation to equity, decreases the allocation to global asset allocation, is the direction that we're moving in. And indeed, that so I think the decisions came about multi-directionally, both from a review of the market environment and forward expectations, as well as the particular circumstances related to the managers that that we presently have. And then the last item, the categorization of Loomis and Bridgewater, and I think in the very back of your book are manager summaries for each of the managers, and I just want to bring you, so Loomis is page 24, and the top of page 24, and you know, in the asset allocation mixes, it shows up as fixed income here in this description. Its role in the portfolio, absolute return. Its asset class is bonds, but the committee is reconsidering the classifications simply because the amount of leverage that and shorts that that are used here make the committee just a little bit uncomfortable with the categorization, and so we've asked NEPC to help us consider, might there be better ways to categorize both Loomis and Bridgewater. And Bridgewater is at the bottom of page 25, and they are in the asset class global asset allocation, but they, you know, really are something of an absolute return approach also, and not quite as much global asset allocation. So those are two managers where we're not necessarily sure that the bucket that they're in is the right bucket. So I guess you'll just have to stay tuned on that, but we wanted to make you aware that that those were two managers where the committee just wasn't 100% comfortable with how they are fitting into the overall framework, and if from a structural investment decision-making perspective they were in the right place. So that does it for me, and hopefully you won't have to hear my voice anymore.
Thank you so much, Lucia. So now I'd like to throw it to Marva. If you go to page 14 in your book, you'll see the slides that start talking about community investing. So Marva, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dan. So I am a member of the Committee on Socially Responsible Investing at the UUA, and the responsibilities of the committee are to identify community investments that we can make across the country, and to also look at issues that may be sensitive to our social conditions or other conditions like labor and environment, and to make recommendations to the investment committee. So as you can see on slide 14, we use this committee as an opportunity to really facilitate our principles. So that when we talk about justice, equity, and compassion, and the inherent worth and dignity of every person, the goal of our investments is to make that real. And then on slide 15, as you can see, our major goal is to make money for the common endowment. And that is balanced with a need to consider how our investments are socially, environmentally important. What is that role? Does it harm labor? Are there gender equity issues or other kinds of equity issues? But basically what we're looking at is a financial bottom line and a social bottom line. Then on slide 16, the kinds of investments that we make are made to what we call community development financial institutions. And these are a range of institutions that primarily work in underserved communities, whether they're minority or low income or have an ethnic minority. We work to provide investments in organizations that either provide loans or provide financial services like checking accounts, and also provide a way for people to save. These agencies can be for-profit or non-profit, and I'll get a bit more into that in a moment. But a really important criterion is that they are community-based, and so they understand their market, and their products and services are targeted and specially designed to meet the needs of their market. On slide 17, there is a description of types of community development financial institutions. Some of them are not regulated by the government, and those include loan funds, which make loans to individuals as well as to developers of affordable housing, either for sale or rental, also for people who are interested in starting or maintaining a micro enterprise, also for community facilities like community rec programs and schools, community health facilities, and also for small businesses. In addition to that, there are also community development financial institutions that are regulated by the U.S. government. Low-income credit unions and community development credit unions are regulated by the National Credit Union Administration, and community development banks are regulated by their appropriate agency, whether it's the Federal Reserve or the FDIC or the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. However, most of the community development credit unions across the country are also affiliated with a trade association, and so there are numerous ways that community development financial institutions can receive technical assistance, and we can receive information on community development financial institutions. There is also a federal fund that provides investments in community development financial institutions, that is the CDFI fund, and the fund also certifies community development credit unions, and so that's another good way of looking at the sustainability and the overall effectiveness of the management of the community development financial institutions. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like you to skip ahead two slides to number 19. And as most of you, I'm sure, know, 1% of the common endowment can be invested in community development financial institutions. And we currently have about 1.7 million investments. Most of these are direct investments, excuse me, in community development credit unions and in community loan funds. I'd also like to mention that there are a couple of these loan funds that do not operate in the United States. So we make investments in OK Credit, which provides loans for people across the developing world. In addition to that, we also match the investments of our congregations, and we have about $300,000 that has matched those investments. Most of the investments from congregations are about $10,000. And then there are other investments in some some of the trade associations that I mentioned of community development financial institutions, as well as larger community development financial institutions operating in New York and other areas, as well as the Calvert Foundation. And so at this point, we have about $200,000 that can be invested in additional community development financial institutions. And one of the things that we're currently looking at is the possibility of investing in community development financial institutions that are located in the Portland, Oregon region. If you attend the General Assembly in June, I hope that you will come to our session, and you'll have an opportunity to meet the staff of the community development credit unions or community development financial institutions in that region that we choose. And then if you go back to slide 18, this is a list of information that we pull when we look at matching funds as well as our own investments in community development financial institutions. And as you can see, there's a range of data on community development financial institutions. So that's the end of my presentation. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thanks a lot, Marva. That was great. This has been a very rich call, great presentations from both Lucia and Marva. You can see both of the committees are extremely active right now, a lot of stuff going on. So we only have a few minutes left. I'm showing about 6 minutes. If you press *6, that will unmute your phone. You can ask a question, and then after you're done, just hit *6 again to remute your phone. So *6 to open up your phone if you have a question. I'm not hearing anything. Actually, I think what I'll do is open up all the lines just to make sure we're not missing anything.
All guests have been unmuted.
Okay, so let's try again. Anybody have a question?
This is Robert. It is in Chicago. In social responsible investing, I was wondering if there are policy guidelines to decide the amount of asset allocation. What are the evidence of safeguarding our assets, and particularly to make sure that there's a fair chance of various people getting these grants or loans or whatever we call them, so that they're not just friends of friends. So what are the policy allocation decisions and the guidelines that you use?
Very good question. So the matching funds are identified by the congregation. Those are primarily to community development financial institutions that operate in their region. In addition to that, in terms of the kinds of research that we do, we look very extensively at the data of the sources of information that I mentioned, and we also look at the financial statements of each of the community development financial institutions over a period of time to make sure that they're operating sustainably and that their loan portfolio is healthy.
When are you going to be home?
We have an average return of a little over 1%. And although that's very modest, I think when you consider the Fed regulations on interest rates, that that's a fairly good return. In terms of the diversity of our portfolio, I think that that's a very good point. And our portfolio has investments for many different kinds of community development financial institutions, and they're basically all over the United States. We have investments in groups that operate in the South, in the Midwest, the Northeast, and also the West. So I think that, sort of generally speaking, that our portfolio is very diverse. And, of course, we're open to making matching investments in community development financial institutions that a congregation may bring to us.
Thank you. Hey, this is Scott Roslin out in Corvallis, and I wanted to ask Tim about the recommendation going forward, 5% draw or less for 2015-16 budgeting. That's where we're at, and I promised that I would ask that question.
Yeah, this is Tim. I think that's a good question. If you saw the earlier slide, it showed that NEPC is forecasting actually lower long-term returns than we've had. So I think you really need to look at your long-term spending policy. I think, you know, frankly, 5% looks pretty aggressive right now. If you look at what other endowments are doing, they tend to be in the range of 4.5%, I think is the average these days, 4.5, 4.6. You know, you just need to be prudent and look at your particular circumstances. But the long-term outlook is modest these days.
Right.
Mike, am I going to share the slide? I'm sorry. Should I share the slide 12? The 2015 expected return with the rebalancing, you're going to it still shows Wellington at 5%. Is that a different Wellington fund? But I'm going to share the expected return, the risk going forward with either, I'm sorry, Mix D. Where do you think
Mix D is where the committee ended up. Wellington is on the list because that was an independent decision made at the meeting to get rid of Wellington. So they will be replaced by something. That is in process right now.
These are the slides, from the meeting.
Right,
where
so
that
they
decision
prepared the
was made
before the decision was made.
Okay.
But
you'll
see
I can share
the new mix gives slightly higher expected returns, slightly higher volatility, and very similar sharp ratio.
Great, thanks.
So everybody, I think we're right up against 3 o'clock. We promised to get you out of here at 3 o'clock. If there are other questions occurring to you, please feel free to contact me or Susan Helper directly, and we will be happy to get back to you. So again, thanks to Lucia, thanks to Marva, and thanks to our committees for all the great work they do. So thanks, everybody.
Thank
you very much.
Bye.
Bye.